Hello, and welcome to the AI Spectrum Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Akame. In this series, we look at a wide range of artificial intelligence topics from all across Siemens and how they are applied to different technologies. In this episode, I am once again joined by Dr. Justin Hodges, an AIML technical specialist and product manager for SimCenter, to discuss the many ways in which generative AI is impacting the world of computer-aided engineering, simulation, and product design. Last time, you talked a lot about the applications of generative AI and how it can help alleviate what you called the dull, dangerous, dirty, and difficult tasks lift those from humanity's shoulders, and the many applications of basically creating kind of AI knowledge bases and helping systems that can kind of take the place of an expert at the kind of on the shoulder of somebody working on difficult tasks and software. But beyond that, how do you see generative AI coming into play in the world of engineering and simulation?
Yeah, so this is where it gets really nerdy and therefore where I really, really like it. So I think that you see different approaches in the design, in engineering design philosophies. You see more and more approaches over time. And basically the whole point is, give me a better answer. Give me a more optimally designed component or things like that. And there are definitely some solid approaches in the playbook of generative AI that can give you better designs if you use that or integrate those approaches. So this could be variational autoencoders. This could be GANs. You know, basically this idea of help me get better designs, right? In our simulation world, at least, a lot of the methods are 30 years old or 20 years old, and they keep getting better and better. And it's really cool to see integration of stuff like this. One thing I think of that's a pretty relatable example is, I guess it's concerning like our system simulation software, where, you know, I'm not designing something that's like pretty much set in stone, like a car with all the, you know, I kind of know everything about the car at that point, but maybe something super early in the design phase where maybe I'm designing a drone and I don't know if I want to power the battery or gas. I don't really know how much I want it to weigh. I don't know if I want it for long distance or short distance. I don't know how I want it to take off. I mean, at that point, you're not just tweaking one little component. You're tweaking a system of systems, and there's almost infinite number of possibilities for how you could design it, right? And I think in generative engineering and with machine learning there in the background as the engine on how that's possible, we have more and more techniques that can help you get the optimal designs when you do have like an inconceivably large amount of options. So that's definitely a place. I hope it makes sense, but you know, the situations where you're early in the design process and there's just too many options and it's overwhelming, that's certainly one area. The other, which could be relatable if you're designing, you know, end stage, kind of more further along the design process, and you just focus on like certain components. So in this case, you can use these techniques in generative AI to generate new geometries or to do maybe reverse engineering or inverse design. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about reverse engineering, but I'd love it if you could explain more, maybe give us a little more detail, go into a little more depth on that.
Yeah, sure. So let's say I want to design flow through a duct, I guess. You know, my process may be sequential and iterative to how I change the design. So I run a simulation. I look at the results, whether automated with an algorithm for a cost function or just myself with my eyes. You know, I'll tweak something in the geometry and then change it again and see how the results change. So it's very forward in the sense that I change the geometry and then I look at the results and see what they are. In that approach that I described, whether you want to call it reverse engineering or inverse design, it's probably better to call it inverse design, I guess. I'm doing the opposite. I am specifying the results and setting them as a field to say this is the constraint. You know, so I'm imposing the results rather than imposing the geometry. And then I'm solving what the geometry would be to have to satisfy that constraint of the results looking the way they do. And yeah, it could be a machine learning model there that is able to provide such a connection, you know, and be able to learn from simulation data and then, you know, provide the matching or the the correlation between results and geometry. So in that case, you know, it's generative. You're generating a piece of geometry or a surface or design or a set of design parameters that satisfy your requirements for how that part should perform. I've done that firsthand, and it's pretty fun because it can take like 90 seconds if you have a machine learning model that's spitting out inference over and over and over again in an optimization cycle. So yeah, sure, it's not going to always work. It's going to have its own nuances and limitations like anything else. But hey, that's 90 seconds. That beats the former approach where, you know, I have to run a simulation and then iteratively change every single time. You know, maybe one simulation, best case scenario, takes 90 seconds. It's not often it would, depending on the type of simulation, it could be a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, you could very easily spend, you know, days or even weeks on that if you have to run a lot of complicated simulations in the kind of the forward method where you're starting with a design and then figuring out how it performs. It sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's the union of the two. To interrupt. Here's the union of the two, right? Like I've run, maybe it's flow simulation, right? So I've done those as a company. I have those in my historical databases. Maybe it's a campaign that could take a month to do again and run more simulations, right? Or maybe if I establish this as a method, I can train a machine learning model based on that history of data, history of simulations I have, and then I can take some time to set up this inverse design philosophy, and then I can do these generative predictions where it's creating and telling you what the best geometries are. If that only takes a couple minutes to run, or a very, relatively shorter amount of time, maybe I could do that a few times and then essentially let that proceed where I run simulations. It's like a huge head start into my design space on where I should look, designs I should consider, etc. And then that way, when I do go forward and I use my trustworthy, vetted sort of traditional approaches of simulation, I at least have a huge head start on what might be the best to place in the design space to get the most optimal result. So there's really a union of the two. Some people are afraid, it'll just wipe out engineering or the workforce, but I don't see it that way. I really see it as a tool to just supplement.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. AI is never, or I wouldn't say never maybe, but at least not for the very long foreseeable future. It's not going to be able to replace what a human designer or human expert can do. Like you mentioned at the beginning, it's kind of like a powerful tool for making life easier for these experts. It cuts out stuff that would take a very long time or stuff that is tedious. And it says, hey, rather than, like you said, that month-long investigative period you're doing, you just take a few minutes, just run these simulations, and now you've put yourself in a much better position moving forward into this design space that you're exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that quote, right? Lift the dull, difficult tasks so we can focus on the essence of our work, right? And like you said, I mean, you may still take 1 month to do the flow simulation study, but hey, if you have a huge head start, then the outcome is your designs are just better. So in that case, no one's losing their job, right? People are just making more performant designs, which is great.
Yeah. So I think you've kind of touched on this a little bit already with the idea of AI creating design, like generating designs from these requirements. So I guess that, can you maybe more a little bit more explicitly talk about where you see AI fitting into the paradigm of like requirement-driven design software, like Siemens' own HEADS tools, where you're putting in these requirements and kind of getting results out of it from multiple other sources of software, kind of?
Yeah, that's non-trivial, right? Because I basically said, all these huge changes are involved and it could be different approaches. So yeah, you're right. Naturally, your software provider needs to be flexible and also provide more things to you, right? Like for example, training these models, I mentioned you use historical simulation data, right? Well, it's not magic in the sense that it involves things like sampling and statistics and that sort of idea. That's the basis for how you decide what data you need and how the data you have will create a model, right? Maybe you can realize in your data set, you know, your model will not be too good unless you run more simulation points in this design space or for certain values of these parameters. So you really need something like Heeds that can provide you that analysis. And again, not as a machine learning expert, but as like a flow simulation expert or heat transfer expert or like a any sort of specific domain, right? As a non-AI expert, it needs to make that clear to you. And then it needs to give you the tools to fix it, right? So in that case, another use case for generative AI is data augmentation, right? So I can create synthetic CFD data to supplement my existing data set. And then that way, when I train my model on that, it's more accurate, it's more well-rounded. And the implication there is when I go use the model, it'll be able to accurately predict in a lot more scenarios, which is great. But even aside from the technical, you know, we're introducing a lot of things that, like you said, are a paradigm shift. When we do these sorts of things, we're going to need different hardware, right? Like GPUs oftentimes. So in that case, I mean, it's just a hardware shift as well in terms of architecture. And as well, we want this to be multi-agent, multi-worker, multi-actor, whatever you want to call it, right? This is going to be data from a lot of different teams. These cycles of model predictions are going to be faster. So a lot of people will run their own experiments. So yeah, you really need something like Heeds Connect or some environment where it's connected to a lot more databases, a lot more people. You can distribute, you know, whatever I do to you and to others so we can all sort of learn from it. Data management access obviously is a huge part of this, right? Now you need to have this sort of thing all connected so models can pull data and train. And then when you make models, right, you have to have versioning and storage and deployment, which are, you know, unique concepts as far as this goes in software, because when we release Simpson or Star CCM Plus, you know, that's a version, and you'll have another one coming out a few months later. But you can make several versions of a machine learning model in the same day, and they can be used for different purposes, conservative, aggressive, different kinds of models with different levels of like tolerance for risk or uncertainty. So you really also need a part of this ability to version and store and deploy without getting messy. And yeah, so horizontal products like Heeds are quite important for that as we see this growth of generative AI and just machine learning in general, I would say.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, this sort of requirement-driven design and then in relationship with these other tools like Heeds is going to be a very almost more important moving forward, where you'll need a way to where it's already a very valuable tool for kind of connecting different aspects of a design process or different areas or of expertise or domains, really. And now that you're also throwing kind of AI into the mix, you really need this here to kind of as like a layer where everything can connect, and then it can connect the models into everything almost.
Exactly. And I don't mean to make it overly complex or convoluted. I mean, look at this aspect pushed all the way to the extreme, to the asymptote, right? Mm-hmm. Like Facebook, you know. I mean, how many different, or Twitter, right, for example, how many different sources of information or data are there, right? All the users, all their activities, all their scrolling, things that they do and don't like, ads they click on and don't. Right. I mean, that's a lot of data to manage, as well as the models that are learning and then progressively providing them with new content that are estimated to be to their liking. Right. So in that case, mm-hmm. that's like an upper limit of how connected and flexible and quick in terms of deployment of these models. Right. This is a very different scenario than just making a machine learning model in your own little Python laptop, saving it to your local machine and saying, I did my task. Right. Like I ran my simulation and that's it. Now we need these products to connect them all together so that people can really make use of them. And I think that's just, like you said perfectly, it'll be a paradigm shift in terms of the software that we use as we generate data, even through traditional software like flow simulation. And, you know, those things will still be integral, right? We just need layers on top.
Thanks for that great answer, Justin. But I think we are about out of time for this episode. So once again, I have been your host, Spencer Akain, joined by Dr. Justin Hodges on the AI Spectrum podcast. And I encourage you all to tune in next time as we continue our discussion about generative AI.